Jack, welcome to the show.
Very good to be with you, Karen.
I'll tell you, you were on several weeks ago for the Route 66 thing, and we had so many emails just pouring in and phone calls about how much you've meant to people being Jimmy Olsen in TV. And of course, you have had such a long, illustrious career in television and in films, and we want to go into a little bit more about that. But I just wanted to let you know, boy, you've got a big fan base.
Gee, or as Jimmy would have said, golly. I'm very glad. It's wonderful to the people, remember you and remember you well.
Do you watch any of the old Superman shows?
Oh, sure. I did. I'll tell you, they have been the TV Land, which is Viacom. It was on Nick at Night. They've been the most careful with the shows of any of the venues since we went into syndication years ago. They have beautiful prints, and at least half the shows were shot in actual Technicolor, and they look good. And so, yeah, I was interested to see them in prime time again.
Oh, no, I heard that the makeup was pretty heavy duty back in those days of television, and because the lights were so hot, did the makeup actually melt on your face?
Well, let me tell you, I was difficult. I wouldn't wear makeup. I didn't like to wear makeup, and it used to the cameramen generally they'd be friendly to me. Finally, it's harder to light, so I didn't wear makeup. In films, a big Technicolor film, I did wear makeup, and the lights were called Fighter Squadron, that Raoul Walsh directed. That was at Warner Brothers, and the lights were hot. And not only that, it was at that time three strip. They had three strip Technicolor, and they had to keep like mattresses or quilts over the camera because they made a noise, and all that was uncomfortable. But in the Superman show, I didn't wear makeup. I always had decent skin and coloring. I like to go to the beach and surf and stuff, so I just thought, I'm just going to look like me.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Now, tell us about some of the films that you were in. You were under contract with Warner?
I was under contract at Warner's in 1948, signed the same weekend that Debbie Reynolds signed, and we were kind of the studio brats. And I got a big break right away in a film called Fighter Squadron, which was a major production, personal production, really, of Jack Warner, who had gotten a lot of the Technicolor footage of the Air Corps at D-Day. He'd been a colonel in the Air Corps, and he snapped up all this footage, and they did a film around the footage with a marvelous actor, Edmund O'Brien, and Bob Stack. And I had one of the leads in it. My kid comes in halfway through the film, but is a very, very good part and kind of launched me, we'll say, at a bad time in motion pictures because sure, by 1950, the studios, Warner's closed down and RKO closed down. A lot of the studios went under with the rise of television and when they had to sell their movie theaters.
Now, a lot of actors did not want to make that jump from films to TV, but you didn't have a problem with that, correct?
I did have a problem with it. My problem was when they dropped my contract, I could have gone over to MGM where Debbie Reynolds went, and I could have gone to 20th Century Fox. But I'd gotten into a play when they dropped my contract called The Great Man with a great star at the time, Dolores Costello and Albert Dekker. I played their son. And I got the theater bug real bad. And I wanted to get to New York. This play did not quite work. We played up north with it and in Los Angeles. And so I didn't want another stock contract where they really controlled you utterly. I wanted to be in the theater and Broadway. And what happened was exactly at that, in 1951, they started to make the first television filmed shows. There had been live television, but never filmed television. Jackie Gleason shot a show that never went on the air called Life with Riley, later went on with Bill Bendix. And I Love Lucy was shooting, but that was the free camera show. And I was offered to play. I played L.A. in this play and had a lot of notice in it. And I was offered to play Jimmy in one of the first television series ever filmed, which was The Adventures of Superman. And everybody said to me, look, kid, you want to get to New York. You don't want another studio contract. You're this, you're that, and you're very mixed up. Why don't you just take the money and run? Do this. It's be 26 shows. You know, you'll make some dough, and you can go off to New York. So that's what I did. I did the show. I enjoyed it enormously. It had a wonderful crew and cast from first to last. I loved working with all the actors, George Reeves and first Phyllis Coates, then Noel Neo, the wonderful John Hambleton, who was my Perry White, Bob Shane. And we had a great crew, and everybody was experimenting to shoot as fast as they could. Nobody knew exactly how to shoot a fast television show. So it was going to be much quicker than a B film. And so we were all like pioneers, and it was fascinating to be a part of all that. And then I did go to New York, and the show didn't go on the air until 1953, and I'd forgotten about it. I was working in live television in New York, and then it went on the air, and I didn't think it would have any effect on my life at all. I just suddenly went on the air on ABC, actually, at 7:30. You know, it was in prime time, and it became a huge success, and I became Jimmy Olsen, and that's my life story.
Well, Jack, when you say film live television in New York, certainly in those days, did anyone think this was going to be successful? Because there were so many, as you say, pioneers, and everything they were doing was for the very first time. There had to have been a lot of stress, because this is happening live, and who knows what's going to happen.
Exactly. I don't know how I did it. I don't know how any of us did it. I did all the shows. When I look back on it, it seems insane to think you could rehearse for 10 days or a week and do an hour show live in front of millions of people. And I once had an experience. I was doing a show called The Web with Lorne Greene and a wonderful actress, Phyllis Kirk. And she was trying to get my character to murder her father, who was Lorne Greene, on the principle that he was going to murder us in a very haunted, rainy house. And it was such a troubled production. We rehearsed, but it was too long, the script. And they suddenly made a lot of cuts just before we went on the air. And I made my entrance wetted down. They wetted me down. It was coming out of the rain. And I saw Phyllis Kirk's eyes when she opened the door. And she was a wonderful actress, but she was just glassy-eyed. And I thought, what's the matter with her? And I thought, as they panned me in with that red light on the camera, I thought, I know what's the matter with her. She doesn't know what she's doing, and I don't know what I'm doing. And there's millions of people watching us, so we've got to get through this hour. It was like a nightmare.
Well, how did you guys do?
We did okay. She called me. She was doing a play with Henry Fonda, Point of No Return at the time. And she called me and said she was going to run the Kinescope. Did I want to go see it? And I thought, okay, let's see what it was. And because the sponsors were Kent Cigarettes, and always when you did a big live show, and if you were kind of a known actor, people made a big fuss over you and came down. Nobody came down. That they left me a carton of Kent Cigarettes that I don't smoke in my dressing room, and nobody came. And I thought, oh, this must have been horrible. But it wasn't. Actually, it was okay. And except that the last line, when of the thing, the boy could have killed this father, and the camera came on at me when all was revealed that the daughter was mad, who was trying to get me to do this. I was laughing hysterically, Phyllis Kirk was. I was supposed to say in big close-up, I could have killed you. I could have killed you with this gun in my hand. And I didn't say a darn thing. The camera came in. I was just absolutely blank. Glad the hour was up, I guess. That's why I didn't get any nice comments from the advertising agencies.
Well, you see today, and it seems like it's so much easier and smoother than the original days of television. And now, Jack, did you know when there was going to be a close-up? Did they tell you? Did they signal you?
Oh, yes. You did it. What you did was you rehearsed and rehearsed and rehearsed. This was for CBS. And they were, the directors at that time in New York would run around with viewfinders. They did things like, for instance, Raoul Walsh would never do. They were acting really like directors, and they would look at you through viewfinders and figure out the trackings of the cameras. And you'd have big time lapses where you'd have to make a quick change of clothes from one scene to the other. It would be the next day. And not in this show I'm talking about, but in many shows, you just, the wardrobe would, as you were walking from one set to the other, they'd change your pants and your coat, and you'd come in and tennis anyone in the next set. Anyway, it was all very stressful and such, but they absolutely knew what they were doing, and what you would do was you'd rehearse, and then the actors would have a dress rehearsal for actors, and then you'd be off for like an hour, and then they'd have a technical rehearsal, camera rehearsal. And then you'd rest for a couple of hours, and then come on, and then you were on the air. This was on a Sunday night. And that's why when we got all of these cuts, I mean, tremendous amount of cuts in the script before we went on with the show, The Web, everybody went to their dressing room and were memorizing the cuts. But, of course, it's not possible to remember all of that. And though we poor fools thought that we did, we bungled through somehow.
Boy, it sounds like a long day, Jack.
It was a long day. It was very, very tough. It was wonderfully exciting. It was like doing a play without that much rehearsal with... you know, with under a lot of tension. I did the most gratifying thing I did in live television. I got to play the son of Frances Farmer. Frances Farmer, do you know who I'm speaking of?
Oh, sure, sure, yeah.
She attempted to make a comeback in the 1960s, and she came here. She lived in Indiana, and she'd been a great star, and I got cast as her son and a wonderful actress, Doris Hart. Cast as her daughter in an hour NBC show, and that was just to work with Frances Farmer. She only did two things, and then she didn't. The comeback didn't work, and she went back to Indiana. But it was very, very exciting to work with her, and because I had admired her very much. She was a lovely woman.
Now, Jackie, I know the movie came out about her, and most people probably haven't even heard about her except for the film about her, because so many of her movies and appearances were just taken away and put away. But
yes.
But she was, in her day, she must have been extremely big.
Yes, she was very, very popular. She was both a Broadway actress and a big movie star who co-starred with people like Bing Crosby. And she was very beautiful. And then, according to the book... and then the film that they did of her life, Miss Farmer, that she'd had a lobotomy, they said. But I had checked with Dolores Hart, who was an MGM star, a beautiful girl also, who after this became a nun. And she is still very, for all of these years, she's been a nun. She's at the Abbey of Regina Laudis in Bethlehem, Connecticut. And she's Mother Dolores there. But we checked, the writer of the book wanted to interview us about Frances Farmer. And I knew there was this handle on her that she had a lobotomy. But both Dolores and I agreed that no one who ever had a lobotomy ever did an hour live television show. And she was letter perfect. She showed no sign. Yes, she had been institutionalized. That's what happened to her career.
Right.
She'd been a great star, and she had total nervous breakdown, and she spent times in institutions. But she still was a very beautiful, older woman when we worked together. And she certainly never had a lobotomy, though the story on her, and I know it in the Jessica Lange film, is that she did have a lobotomy.
Now, did you do any behind the scenes camera, many behind the camera work?
Did I? Well, I produced some films.
Such as?
I actually produced, I was vice president of James Bridges Productions and worked on script and on casting and editing of films, Back to the Baby Maker, The Paper Chase, China Syndrome, Urban Cowboy, and then I co-produced the last one was Bright Lights, Big City with Michael J. Fox, yeah. Perfect with John Travolta and Jamie Lee Curtis, and Mike's Murder, which I'm very proud of, with Deborah Winger. And it was a smaller film, but it was a true thing, a romanticlef of something that happened in Los Angeles.
No, it was a great film. What made you choose the films that you wanted to produce?
Well, I had James Bridges began his directing career doing plays of mine at the Mark Taper Forum and then off Broadway. I write plays. I'd always written plays. That's why I still write, and I had written, as you may know, I've written, I kind of segued into the classical music world. I have written a lot of libretto work, in other words, all the words to song cycles with Ned Roram, and a number of operas. Lord Byron, which was commissioned by the Metropolitan Opera with the great Virgil Thompson, and I have a new opera coming out, that I perform in, I narrated, oh. It'll be out in Koch International, called The Astronaut's Tale.
Oh, Jack, what a neat concept for an opera.
Yeah, well, it's about a farm boy who wants to be an astronaut, and it was premiered in Boston and has been done again there and then recorded by Koch International, and that will be out. It's, in my mind, a kind of a companion piece to Stravinsky's The Soldier's Tale. And that will be out after the first of the year. But I narrated it. There's a narrator in The Soldier's Tale, and they wanted me to narrate it here in Boston at the premiere, and I thought, why not?
Does it take
so I did. I do it on the CD.
Does it take a lot of patience, Jack, to write for the operas, to write the librettos?
Yes. I'm very slow. I'm not a quick writer, and I never think of writing a movie script or anything like that. It takes me a long time. And I write in the forms. I like to work in verse forms, which is why I never make a living as a playwright, though I have had plays that have been successful in their own way. A play of mine, Chuck, which premiered at the Mark Taper in Los Angeles and then was off Broadway, became the first. It's a one-act play in verse. It was the first play broadcast on PBS's Theater in America. With March Champion, I did it, and it's. I do a lot of, but I like language experiments, and you're not going to get a big audience when you're working in verse.
But it must take, as you say, a lot of time and require a lot of patience. So
yes.
You've done so many things in the film genre. Is there one thing that you particularly prefer to do? Is there one thing that just you just yes, I love editing, or yes, I love producing, or yes, I love writing, or yes, I love acting?
I was very, what can I say? I was very sorrowful, I guess is the word, melancholy, because I loved acting so much that at a certain point I really couldn't go on with it because I became so typed as Jimmy Olsen. People just wouldn't hire me as anything. See, we were on the air for 7 years.
Right.
We're still on the air. And I really became very, very popular. And, but at that time, you couldn't make the bridge between television and films. I'm talking about the 60s, when I was in the 50s and in the early 60s when the show was first on the air. People like Wally Cox, who did Mr. Peepers, who'd been on
right.
the cover of Life magazine, was a wonderful actor and Marlon Brando's best friend, couldn't ever get another job, really. He did everything. And so they didn't want you in films, and they wouldn't have you in films if you were a TV personality. And so I just began to run into a brick wall, and when live television, where they did want you, dried up, it ceased to be any dramas on live television, there just wasn't work. And I went to Europe to work, and I did actually a film in Germany at Bavaria Filmkunst, and Warner's would be very nice to me from time to time. The last thing I did really They gave me a very good part, a co-starring part with Ethel Barrymore, who was a great, great star, in her last film called Johnny Trouble. And I do those things, but it was obvious that I was not going to have a long career as an actor, and I just couldn't get work. Later, when I had produced these films, like Bright Lights, Big City with mm-hmm. Michael J. Fox, or Perfect with John Travolta, and I worked on Urban Cowboy. I was the vice president of the company at that time, and I would look at them because they came from television. And I thought, well, if it had been then
right.
what it is now, I would have gotten a break to move into films. Now, if you're on, you know, popular on, you know, a show like Friends or Beverly Hills, whatever, you know, anybody that's popular on any television show now gets at least an opportunity to do a film, one film. If it doesn't work, like most of the kids, it doesn't work, then that's it. They get one opportunity.
But at least they get that shot. Well, what's your favorite program on today on television?
A biography. I like it very much. I definitely watch biography, and I've been watching the repeats of the Civil War, Ken Burns' Civil War. I'm not much of a watcher. I do turn in to the shows. My favorite show, it's on cable, which I'm crazy about. They're now in reruns. They're not on the first run. It's 6 Feet Under. Have you seen it?
It's good. It's very
well
done. I'm
just crazy about 6 Feet mm-hmm. Under. I mean, it's better than for me than any motion picture, anything. The writing is wonderful. That writer-director, Alan Ball, is brilliant. And all the performances are all wonderful. And so I wouldn't miss an episode. I sit home riveted on Sunday night waiting for the new episodes of 6 Feet Under to come.
Yeah, no, it's very, very well done. HBO's done a good job on all of its shows, and I noticed that more and more, like Bravo, has several shows now, the Breaking News, and there's one about the newspaper, Deadline is called. So I guess now they're all kind of jumping onto that that bandwagon.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, it's a wonderful thing because it's all very, it's original thinking, and they're making, for my taste, the major motion picture studios are not making films. You know, they're making films for teenage boys and girls,
mm-hmm.
Young audience, and they get them. And so more power to them. But
it's a disappointment when you go and you pay all that money to go see a good film.
Yeah.
And it's almost like they're talking down to you. And it's very disappointing, if not frustrating.
Yeah, well, it's all special effects and action and, you know, shoot 'em up and of one way or another. So I'm not in, I really don't go a lot. I do go if there's something I want to see. And but basically, I think that the television, the cable, HBO certainly, and the Showtime are doing the very best work in what we'll call, you know, narrative entertainment. It's wonderful.
Oh, yeah. And any plans for you in the near future? What are you up to now?
I'm trying to work on a book. I've been asked to write a book actually about myself, and I'm trying to do it. It's the hardest thing I've ever done. I do it and then put it down and then run into a brick wall of memory. But I'm trying to do that, and that's about it. Just having a very nice life, enjoying my life. I don't want to produce any more films. You just get involved in, about the last 10 years, focus groups and, you know, all of that. How they're going to market your film, what it means to this supposed audience, the target audience out there.
Yeah, who are they?
I just don't feel like being involved in that mentality.
Well, there you go. Jack, thank you so very much for being my guest.
Well, it's wonderful to talk to you. We certainly covered some basics.